Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, I didn't tell you this, but I just got the COVID and flu booster shots, vaccine shots, like a couple hours ago. And I think just in the past 10 minutes, I'm starting to feel them. So we'll see. We'll see how this recording goes. So we're gonna do a little bit of a short one today. We're both kind of slammed with some work stuff, especially kind of approaching the holidays as well. But we did want to check in. So both of us have, multiple Kickstarters have sort of come to shipping just in the past few weeks. So I've got a stack of books sort of right next to me, and I think you've got a stack of books right next to you too.
I do,
And I want to hear what did you get, and what are you excited about?
On the same day, the Alien Second Edition Kickstarter delivered its physical goods, and the 13th Age Second Edition Kickstarter delivered its physical goods to my door. So
yeah,
I find both of those pretty exciting. The Alien is timely because I've been running a campaign that was like released as part of the Kickstarter, and I've just been making do with like terrible hand-drawn maps and printouts that, like, you know how like your inkjet printer like puts lines through, you know, every 7 pixels or whatever. So the next time we get together to play the next part of the Alien game, we get to use the actual glorious, like, high production values maps and stuff like that. So I'm excited about that.
That's really great. Are you going to change to the second edition rules too?
I've been using the second edition rules. Yes.
Yeah.
They've been out in, like, I guess you would call beta form for a year or two. They're not very different from the first edition.
I was going to ask, like, you are probably the only person I know that I could ask this question to. Like, what's the big difference between the first and second editions?
Edition is too strong a word for it. I would call it like revised or something if I were doing this, but that's fine. I mean, I like the tweaks they've made, you know, I think they were good tweaks. So I don't like that I am repurchasing this expensive hard line of hardcover books again, but I'm 40 years into this hobby. I know how the game is played. So
if you were going to change, you would have changed a long time ago.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. We were talking, in a different thread sort of about like golf as a hobby. That's always my fallback of, like, you know, as ridiculous as whatever we do in this hobby is about buying books and the sort of like rebuying a book with basically just like an errata section. It's kind of like that time to them. Golf exists, so we're probably in the clear as far as hobbies go. Yeah.
Do you hear that, families? My family's not listening, but if they are, just keep that in mind. All right.
Yeah. The alternative is taking up golfing. So
that's right.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty excited about 13th Age. It's funny because it shares has a lot of overlap with Draw Steel, which I got like a couple weeks ago as well. It's not a problem unless you're me and like there's now too many shiny things and there's no additional time that was
with additional time. Yes.
Right. So so my enthusiasm now will just be divided between all these shiny objects.
Yeah. So 13 Age, I mean, I know very vaguely what that is. I guess what's the pitch for it over other systems?
Its pitch will sound a little bit like Draw Steel's pitch. It's like a let's try and fix up D&D 4th edition. 4th edition of D&D, you know, gets a lot of flack from everyone. But I think it's pretty safe to say it did a ton of interesting and intriguing things, even if you did not really feel like they came together into a package that you like calling Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
And so 13th Age was the first game to say, let's take 4th edition and let's bolt on like a narrative style play from, I don't know if Blades in the Dark was out. I don't think it was yet. But, you know, from Apocalypse World and Fate and other types of games. So in that sense, I mean, it really shares a lot of DNA with both Daggerheart and Draw Steel. Draw Steel is also very explicitly like, hey, let's take the tactical engine ideas from 4E and do them a little bit better. And Daggerheart is like, hey, let's take D&D and like bolt onto it a bunch of these other cool things that we've been using in all these other games that for some reason haven't made it into official D&D yet. So, I would say 13th Age sits crunch wise. I think it sits somewhere in between like 5th edition and Draw Steel. Its heart is like that is like lots of power, Magic the Gathering style powers interacting with each other with the idea that like you're never bored in a combat round because you're always planning stuff to do with the other players. So
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's like, I mean, yeah, as much as like fourth edition I feel like gets, you know, people, you know, have a lot of opinions about it, but the people that I know that played it like seem to just really enjoy it.
Yeah,
quite
yeah.
a bit. I mean, it of course didn't have quite the reach as fifth, but yeah. So I'm not surprised to see a lot of people being like, you know what, that was actually really good. Like, how can we make that, you know, keep that and kind of, yeah, make it work for a modern audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, it's a weird edition. It has some genuinely cool ideas. Mm-hmm. Some of them, like, I don't know what they're doing in a game called Dungeons and Dragons exactly, but it's hard to disentangle it from what seems in retrospect like a pretty cynical corporate publishing strategy to milk you with tons of DLC style updates. That was all in vogue around whenever it came out, 2008, 2010, something like that. So it kind of leaves a bad impression in a lot of people's mouths, some because they hate that it went in this kind of really crunchy mechanical direction. Other people kind of resented what Wizards and Hasbro were doing. I think it was Hasbro at the time. I don't know how long Hasbro has owned Wizards, but it's the tale as old as time, right? Like you can go back to first edition D&D and there's Gary Gygax warning you not to use non-TSR branded miniatures because it might destroy your game, right?
So I mean, yeah, it all makes sense, you know. It's like, and then again too, contrasting it with like, you know, Magic the Gathering, which I know like no Magic the Gathering players who don't complain about having to like buy stuff because they keep on putting out more packs, but they also are there day one buying packs, you know.
I'll say one more thing about 13th Age, and then I want to hear about the goodies that arrived at your doorstep. And that is 13th Age, as we've discussed once or twice on this podcast, 13th Age was the first like D&D alike that I played that explicitly was like, you know, that stuff you ignore anyway, let's just not worry about it. So encumbrance is not a thing, ammo is not a thing. You know, how many hexes can you move this round? Not a thing. So there is that real sense of like, this is a game that tries to figure out what people actually do and leaves out the stuff that they don't actually use much. And I obviously what you use from D&D's rules is going to be different from person to person, but you know, obviously there's some pretty obvious targets. If you are not playing it rules as written, you are probably dropping like spell components and encumbrance and, you know, a number of other things and jump distance and stuff like that. So it was one of those first big games where the authors were just straight out and coming out and saying, this is a game about the stuff that's cool and enjoyable. It's not a game about the other stuff. That's why that stuff is not in this game. You know, and it was nice to just hear that articulated. Even though that's something we instinctively all do that when we play a game, right? You just, I mean, when was the last time you used spell components in a fifth edition game, right? Like, or whatever. So I don't know. I appreciated that. It's a much more mainstream idea now, I think, with all these competitor games that are swimming in the same space, but I still kind of got to appreciate it.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but do 13th Age and like Alien, do they have like the game designers' names on the cover, or is it like published by like a
13th Age company? Does okay. Alien, hang on, I can go look at my book. I'm one just, sec.
Okay, yeah,
so that's a fascinating question, by the way. So 13th Age does have the names on the cover. Alien does not.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So I asked this because, so the first book that I want to talk about is, so I got the, I'm going to hold it up too so you can see it. So Blades in the Dark Deep Cuts.
That looks gorgeous.
Yeah. Deep Cuts just came in. And so like, you know, it's John Harper, right? Like wrote it, you know, like he's got, you know, special thanks and stuff. And like, you know, he's got some credits. So but like his name is on the front of both the Blades in the Dark book and then also this one too. Yeah. And like this, like it feels like to me, it feels like a little bit like Sid Meier, right? Like it's like, you know, like the longer that John Harper might do this, like, right, it might start being like John Harper presents you know, Blades in the Dark. Yeah. Because it's very much like kind of a, like, I mean, it is, there's a sense of authorship to both the Blades book and I think this one just from flipping through it that you kind of don't get with like with say fifth edition, with say like a book that is really published as sort of a like a, you know, collective, like a company is putting this out, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I've seen discussion of this in the past. I think some editions of D&D have had the author's names on them. I don't believe that fifth edition does, although I don't have my any books handy to look at. I'm pretty sure they don't.
Because you and sold that all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. In one of my like five times a year peaks of rage.
Yeah. Like, you know, I'm never playing this again. Yeah.
You know, and that's just an interesting thing, right? I'm old enough to remember people kind of joking and mocking when Monty Cook released a book called, but this is like 20 years ago, Monty Cook Presents, and then like the name of the book, and it was like, oh, oh, who's Monty Cook? Like, you know, but isn't it a little weird that we don't have more blatant author ties? And and I realize some books that have like 40 contributors that that does like pose a problem, but you know, most books do not. So
I mean to me it's interesting because like, right, you would never read like a novel that was written by like a company and be like, oh, that's cool, you know, right? Like, yeah, like,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, right, there's always that sense
HarperCollins presents, like, yes, you know, yeah, like
yeah, whatever. Anyway, like, so I mean, I just find that really interesting, right? Because like, so I've got, yeah, so the other book I'm going to mention, then I'll go back to Blades, so I've got Netcrawl here as
so this is my friend of the podcast,
James James Swift is out, right? So James has it listed as Horse Shark Games, although I want to flip in the front, you know, it's like, you once you get into the, you know, the like the cover page, it's, you know, created by James Bosnell, you know, like,
so, yeah,
I mean, I'm gonna also show this that is terrible looks, to do on a podcast.
I don't think we've raved about the art for this, but like, this Kickstarter has some of the most gnarly art I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. So like, okay, so I'll say a little bit of Netcrawl. We'll go back to Blades in the Dark, and we'll go back to Netcrawl after that. If you have the opportunity to flip through the Netcrawl book, you absolutely should. It's one of those things where it's like, I mean, it feels a little bit to me like the first time you see Morkborg, you're like, oh my goodness, like I just need to see like what this looks like inside. Right. Like, he just really nailed kind of the aesthetic that he's going for too in this. And I think he said he's trying to get it in Vault of Midnight, at least in Ann Arbor. So
good,
if you can. But yeah, so anyway, all that to say, it's really great. I love the art. I mean, I've flipped through it a little bit. I haven't had time to read it for lots of very various dumb reasons, but I want to. But like, so going back to Blades in the Dark Deep Cuts. So like, I like love Blades, as if you've listened to this podcast, you know. What a bit. So yeah, when this popped up, I was like, oh my goodness, like this is the sort of thing I want. Like, this is basically just a supplement to Blades that kind of explains some stuff a little bit more, gives you a few more options sort of how to run stuff. I think there might be a couple things in here about you know, like some rules and things like that, but for the most part it's just kind of more flavor on top of it. The thing, I mean, like, so I've really only have like 2 minutes to look through this, but there's like an expanded map of Duskfall in here that's like, you know, pretty early on. I don't think I'll be able to find it right now, but it's like, the map of Duskfall is like, it's so core to me as part of the Blades experience, right? You have this like rough map drawn of what this place looks like, and then you're kind of filling it in from there, right? Even just seeing in this book that it's like, okay, you have Duskfall, and then like now there's these kind of like expanded territories off to the side, to the east of it and stuff, and it's just like, all it is like a couple little boxes, right? That's all I've seen, and immediately my brain is like, I need to play more Blades, like, right, like this, like it just kind of hooks into everything. Is it's like, what do those things, what could those possibly mean, like, you know, how how would those how are those going to interact with stuff? So I mean, it's a very, I mean, to me it's a very evocative system and setting and all that sort of stuff, right? Like, obviously it draws on a lot of different influences and everything, but it's just like, you know, it's the sort of thing where it's really easy for me to get excited about it.
Yeah.
So getting another book that's like, here's some supplemental information, it's like, oh, okay, well, I got to do it more. And then the last thing, so it also came with like a sticker set too, which I'll hold up for you, but there's like lots of like little stickers.
Oh, nice.
I don't know exactly how these work, but there's ones for like clocks, right?
Yeah. So
that's a big thing in Blades, right? You draw these little like pie chart, you know, pie piece clocks that you kind of fill in, which I love. Like, I love having those, like, so it's fun to have this sort of stuff. It's interesting because like, it's a very, I mean, it's a story driven game, right? Like, there isn't like a concept of minis and stuff. And like, I'm at the point in my life where like, I have a little bit more money to spend on like, you know, random knickknacks and stuff. So like, when the last time I was playing in a Blades campaign, I was like, I will buy something. Like, what's the luxury thing to go along with my Blades game? And there was like a set of like steel dice that they sold.
Yeah, so I have these those,
like, really chunky steel die, like, you know, 2d6 that you can play, or I guess 4d6 I can play the game with. But yeah, anyway, so I'm excited for this. I'm hoping I can read it and then maybe convince some people to play through maybe a short campaign of it at some point.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so that's a good one. Yeah,
cool. I'm stuck on the author voice thing.
Yeah, I know.
Just thinking that. Yeah, because one thing I don't know if second edition does this, but the first edition of 13th Age has all these sidebars. It has two, the game book has two authors. They're both pretty well known. Mm-hmm. And they have these little sidebars that are like, we disagree on like how this rule should work in the game. I think I always do it this way, and my partner always does it this other way. Yeah. And I don't know if I need that in every game book, but like, it sure is more fun to read than like whatever the sort of anodyne text you get in a lot of mainstream books. Sometimes you read them and you're like, what? Mm-hmm. Why this level of polish exactly? Mm-hmm. Like, who, and I don't mean this in a snarky way, like, who are you trying to impress with this level of polish, right? Like,
yeah,
first edition D&D, you go back and read it, you're reading something that could only have been written by Gary Gygax, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's quirky, it's idiosyncrasy, it's got his vocabulary, you know, he has this famous vocabulary that lots of us learned weird vocabulary words from reading them in D&D.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember reading like a third edition D&D book where I was like, wow, this is written in a cool like style, right? You know? Like,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's even like a sense of, I mean, like the, you know, original Monsters Manual too, like flipping through that, like which I'll do every once in a while, just as like, because it's just something about it like lights up my brain in a way that, you know, more recent Monster Manuals don't. And I think it is mostly because it's like, there are so many rough edges there, right? And it's not consistent. You know, and it's like, you know, there's thought, of course, given to a little bit of balance, but it's not really like trying to be balanced and stuff. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like the art's all over the place. And it's just like, it's just sort of silly, but also really serious. It's just like, it's the sense of authorship, I think, is pretty important.
Yeah.
You know, too. And I'm not going to go on a big, like a really big AI rant, but I think that is one thing that we are sort of in danger of losing, you know, the more that we kind of offload those sorts of like, you know, structural and syntactical decisions to like an AI or an LLM.
Yeah. Stuff,
like, you start to lose some of that stuff. And especially with art too, right? It's just like, you know, the only thing, you know, and I'll, like these LLMs are only going to ever come up with kind of derivative art, right? Like as far as like art direction is concerned. Right. So like the more that you can have kind of that sense of like weirdness and oddity and stuff, I think that's like, that's what we as humans sort of crave, right? We crave novelty.
Yeah.
And stuff, right? So like, of course, like, yeah, use all these things for kind of the boring bits, but like make sure that there's still like authorship, right? Like reading you know, Blades in the Dark, like it's written by John Harper, like you just get the, like for me, I get the sense of like, this is a manifestation of sort of like what he wants the game to be. And like, you could have that conversation with him about like a disagreement, right? Like what you're saying with 13th Age, those sidebars of like these two people sort of arguing with each other, that helps you sort of understand how they came to the conclusion that they did, or left the vague interpretation up to you, like why they did that, right? Because there is that disagreement that is helpful for you kind of making your own decision about what you want out of this game as well.
And it invites you to participate in, mm-hmm. it invites you to see the game as at least partly like a discussion and a negotiation, right? It's a negotiation between yourself and the other people at the table. What do you want out of this experience? The negotiation between you and the rules, you know? And we've all played with people that don't seem to realize they have permission to just ignore something or to fudge it if it's, you know, right? And, you know, I get that. I've been there as well, but... you know, yeah. I was going to say the Draw Steel has a pretty good author voice, I think, by the way. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to read it yet, but I mean, like, enough so that people online will gripe about it. Like,
yes,
I mean, there's
good.
Like bad jokes and things like that in the actual text, which I, at this point, I find that absolutely charming. But, you know, so.
Yeah.
There's a subset of people out there that are just like, I can't take this.
They're so mad about it. Yeah. Draw Steel is, that's one that it's in shipping right now. Right. So again, like talking about, it's kind of the cornucopia of books that I have coming. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm really excited to get Draw Steel as well. And I know like we've chatted a little bit about like, I'm doing a one shot or a couple session thing. Okay. So then with Netcrawl too, like, again, I haven't done a whole lot of like actual reading of it yet. James, like, right, like, he's amazing. He's read, I think he's read literally every book that has claimed to be part of the cyberpunk genre in order to put this together.
Oh, people, you have no idea the depth he has gone. And we're not just talking like he read William Gibson and like Bruce Sterling. Like he, if something weird came out in like 1982 and there's four trash paperback copies of it left, like he read it somehow because he reports on what he reads from time to time in the Discord. Yeah, and it's like, oh my gosh.
It's astonishing. Yeah. I mean, like I mentioned there's a book that I read when I was growing up that I really liked that was like only tangentially like cyberpunky. Like I think there's like a VR part of it and he tracked it down and read it. And like, it's like, I told him he didn't have to, but yeah. But it's just like, you know, all that sort of stuff. I mean, I think really comes through. It's like, yeah, just like flipping through this, right. This book is just full of these like tables and stuff of like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm just looking at like, there's a list of programs on this page. It's page 73, like the third level, you know, list of programs, antimatter explosion, brain fry, flesh jacked, freeze, lightning bolt, neural feedback assault, right? It's just like full of stuff like this, which just like feels so rich. Right. So like, if you're going to play a game sort of in this world, which, you know, like, so I think I will get sort of the pitch wrong on this, but the idea is sort of like, you're sort of jacked in, right? Like you're jacked in to the metaverse, multiverse, whatever you want to call it, like, you know, you're jacked in. And so then from there it's like, you know, it's like that's where you start. So versus it being like, you know, I don't know, like Shadowrun, right? Like where there's like a mini game thing of that, like you're just always in.
I played in a game that he ran at RFTCon a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, this was years ago, so I don't know, and I haven't seen the final result. I was low on funds when his Kickstarter was out, but I'll be picking up the books when I can. But yeah, it was kind of like, you know, in like a Tron type world. It was not like a rain soaked city, neon city streets, you know, stuff. It was like much wackier. Anyway.
Yeah. Every time I've heard a recap of that game, it's like, you can do that and that crawl. So yeah.
By the way, I'm going to propose that we do a practical joke on James and we tell him we pick like the biggest, densest, like something that's 1,000 pages long by like Murakami or something, and tell him that there's something cyberpunk in it and see.
But like not until like page 900.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. So, okay, yeah. hope James isn't listening, but yeah. You know, John or Chris, I was gonna, one last thing I want to say. One of the biggest existential crises I've had in the age of AI is not like questions of like, oh, will AI replace me? Like, should I be using AI to do my work? But it's the realization that all these years I write like AI, like that's like that style we all sneer at, like that's how I write my emails to like my parents, like I M dashes bullet points, I think so. That's just like a sobering feeling.
Well, Andy, I will defend you for a second. You and I, like, well, I mean, you stayed in the content mines. I did content for a little bit and kind of quickly yes. escaped. So like all this AI has been trained on the sort of work that you were producing for the past couple decades, right?
That's
so
right.
So it's no wonder, right? I mean, if anything, they owe you a royalty check.
That's, I'm still waiting for that check to arrive. Yeah. So everyone, I'm sorry, or you're welcome, depending on what you think of where we've landed on all this.
Yeah,
hey, Chris,
yeah.
Speaking of the content mines, I've got to get back to them in a few minutes.
Yes,
did you have anything you wanted to do for wrap up?
No, I think that's good. So I'm excited to dig into these. I've got a little bit of time off coming up. So I'm just going to probably just sit around and read for a little bit and see how I can maybe work some of these into my life. I'm really glad to have this conversation. It's really cool to see these projects that we all sort of like backed a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Starting to come to fruition. I do feel a little bit like I have a bit of fatigue for like, if anything new comes around, I might not jump to back it because I've just like literally got this like backlog that like, this could be the rest of my gaming career at this point.
Yeah.
Which is exciting, right? You know, you can also, don't hold me to that, because I'm sure next week something will come along on Kickstarter and look, well, I gotta get that too.
Well, here's a crazy thing.
Yeah.
So we've mentioned, I think, four games that just fulfilled recently in Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And they span from small team indie publication to $2.5 million Kickstarter with like a whole team of people and across the world. I kid you not, James's Netcrawl can easily stand up as a physical product and stuff to the $2.5 million alien RPG sitting over there. Like, it's amazing to me that these four games that showed up this week are like just cover, I feel like, all the corners of this little hobby, from like the people doing labors of love to like a megacorp publishing a franchise, a slick franchise production, and then a couple things in between. So
that's a fantastic I think there's a good place to stop. I will also say that James's packaging job was better than everybody else's, so
how many you know who does packaging right is Paizo, because they're the only I will pay extra money to order it from Paizo store, because they put corner guards on the books. And like, I priced corner guards and they're not expensive. Come on, people. Like, just, you know.
You got to put them on, though. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess so.
Anyway, but I think that's good. Okay. So let's wrap it up there, because I know you got to run. We've been Roll for Topic. This is, we're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, is great. You can go find them at thesplatbook.com. And please go check out John and Andy's podcast, Zombie Strains, as well. You can find them wherever you get your podcasts. I think that'll do it for us. So I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.